Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. We are live from Houston, Texas, and we're looking out over the Texas Medical Center right here, right over the right outside my penthouse windows, and the sun just went down. It's kind of a warm day here in Houston. We have a guest tonight that's going to be from the second most beautiful city in the country, Dallas, Texas. But Houston, we're going to take number one anyway. Doug, thank you for the introduction. We have a great program tonight, and we always like to just start off by letting you know that if you have a few minutes of your, I was watching TV just a while ago. Basketball's on, football's on. Okay, this is the place to be tonight because you're going to be able to get something tonight that you're going to be able actually to use in your own personal life, and maybe even somebody that you come across this week or somebody that you can get on the phone right now and say, hey, wait, you won't believe who's going to be on the show this evening. Make sure you tune in. And so let people know that we have an awesome program tonight. Next week, we have Kelly and Seth, and I can't remember their last names, but they are from the Recover Us Clinical Alcohol Treatment Program Center that our guest a few weeks ago, James Brown, went to and that literally transformed his life. And we're going to be doing having them on next week. So we're looking forward to that show. The next few weeks, we have Dr. Bruce Perry is going to be here. Alice Cooper is going to be here. Yes, I didn't stutter. Alice Cooper, he has youth trauma centers in Phoenix, Arizona. And we just have some great guests that's coming on. So we just hope you enjoy and stick with us. If you want to get involved tonight, we are live all over the world with Facebook and iHeartRadio and all kinds of other platforms. But 888-627-6008. You can call in live, and it comes right through. Doug, Don, Chris, Thomas, one of them will answer the phone there in California and patch you right on through, and we'd love to have you get involved tonight. Tonight, I want to let you know, you may want to get a pen. You may want to get a pad of paper, because I have a feeling that doing this show over a year, you have guests that you know is going to be good. They're going to tell a good story. But then you have the insight, I think, after meeting so many people that, hey, this is somebody special. This is somebody that has some wisdom, that has really been in the victim role, but now has learned some things and now spending the rest of their life helping other people. And I just gravitate to those type of people. And she's going to share with you so many things that you want to write down and make sure you don't forget and be able to share with other people. Tonight, it is my honor to welcome Jenna Quinn from Dallas, Texas. And Jenna is a survivor, triumphantly, of child sexual abuse. She's a TED speaker. I don't know if you know anything about TED speakers. You just don't get to be a TED speaker. You have to really be somebody to be a TED speaker. I've been trying for the last 3 years, and they don't even, who's Greg? We don't want to talk to you. But anyway, she is a TED speaker and the namesake of something that just happened the last couple of weeks and in Texas for quite a while, but Jenna Quinn Law, and she's going to tell us about that. She is became a valiant warrior against the sexual abuse of children and adolescents. And after disclosing her own experience in that world, she now shares her life with other people about their torment. And I tell you what, I just read, it's on Kindle, I just read this book, Pure in Heart, this week. And I recommend everybody right now, well, not right now, wait till the commercial break, download this, buy this book, review that book, put it, you know, your thoughts about it on Amazon, because, you know, every writer loves to get those. But I'm fixing to do my review this evening because I just read it and I fell in love with it. I am pleased to welcome from Dallas, Texas, live, Jenna Quinn. Jenna, good to have you with us this evening. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Greg. Thank you so much for having me. I'm just as thrilled to be talking with you as well, you know, virtually having this experience. And gosh, I feel like we could probably talk for hours. So we're going to have to try to get in what we can in the short amount of time.
I'm looking forward to this. And I see the things behind you. Is that you and Rick Perry?
It is, yes.
Oh, wonderful. Good old Rick. Yeah. Okay.
Good old Rick Perry, yes. In 2009, Jenna's Law, the original form of Jenna's Law, passed unanimously in Texas. And so that's Governor Perry and I at the signing ceremony. So it was a very special day for the family. Everyone came up for it. And yeah, just.
Since when does a law ever pass unanimously?
Miracle.
I see God in your life and just directing it, and now, you know, there's all those dark days, and now it's just wow how he's used you. I'm so excited for you being here. Where did, and I know where you got it, but share with people the book. How hard was it to finally say, I want to tell the world what happened to me? It's not just telling a couple people, and in your case, in the courtroom. How hard was it to just really take that mask off?
You know, it actually really started with the first interview I did publicly was just days after my perpetrator was sentenced to prison. And so, you know, it really was a supernatural thing. And I don't say that lightly. It really was the way it happened and the way I ended up sharing initially for the first time. And I was 17 years old, and the Dallas Morning News asked to do this story and came to our house. And, you know, we did the interview, and, you know, he's asking me, the last question that he had for me was, you know, what would you tell other survivors out there? What would be your message? And I was still very much, of course, naturally healing at the time. I didn't make my outcry till I was 16 years old. And we ended up, thank goodness, we went to trial fairly quickly, looking at, you know, averages. And I was, you know, at a very difficult place. I could hardly make eye contact with people. You know, my self-esteem was still very crushed, and I could hardly even carry a sentence, right? But he asked, what would you tell other survivors? And I said, you know, tell someone, but just don't tell anyone. Tell someone that's going to actually do something about this to get you the help that you need, right? And he said, okay, thank you. That's all we need right now. Oh, and don't worry, Jenna, I will not put your name in the paper. And just something not naturally from within myself sprung up inside me. And I got this supernatural boldness. And I looked at him in the eye and I shouted, no. I said, no, you can't do that. And he looked at me very confused. And he looked at my dad, which was, he was standing right there, you know, for the interview the whole time. And he said, well, why? You know, he was shocked. He was very taken back by my sudden reaction to his statement of concealing my name. And he said, you know, well, we always conceal the names of victims. And especially since you're 17 years old, you're a minor in our state. And I said, well, the last thing that you asked me to do was to talk to other survivors. And I asked them to also, you know, speak up and tell someone and to find that bravery and that courage within themselves. And how can I ask them to do that if I am too ashamed to say who I am and to say that I have been through this experience as well? And so, you know, just there really wasn't any thought put into it. It was just this natural instinct that rose up in me as a 17-year-old. And, you know, thank goodness he did publish my name. And from then on, there was just a need, you know, we got letters and the news station sent us emails, and just, there were so many people that were wanting to understand more about this crime, this hidden crime, this crime that's not spoken. And this was in 2004, right? So this was hardly talked about at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, from then on, I had no clue, really. I didn't understand the impact of what I did as a 17-year-old. And now I see and have seen since then just the outpouring of other survivors, loved ones of survivors, just the need to understand this, the need to, how do I confront this? How do I face this? How do I educate? How do I talk to my kids? And so there's just so many conversations and there's so many layers around this topic that people are just now, you know, finally, we've got so many years later, right? Since 2004, we've seen a lot of progress made as far as our awareness and our social attention to this crime and to this issue.
Do you think, because I think one of my stepping stones, and the first stepping stone that I believe helped me, because I hid it for 35 years, that 35 years destroyed me emotionally, relationships and physically. And I think one of the first steps for healing for me was to finally say, I'm a victim.
Yeah.
I have been sexually abused. I have been touched. I have been violated. And when I said that out loud to somebody, it was like a moment where the baggage kind of started falling off. Mm-hmm. Was it that same way with you?
Yes, because I struggled for years, you know, my abuse occurred, you know, not just once, for multiple times over several years. My perpetrator was, you know, a family friend and also played the role of a basketball coach in my life. And so, you know, it's a very scary to tell. And it's, unfortunately, you know, we see that disclosures are unfortunately rare. And we're trying to change that. We're trying to get more kids and adults to speak up and tell. But keeping that horrible, shameful secret inside is, you know, I learned there's a high cost to silence as well. And it's not uncommon. You know, you think, oh, I'm not sleeping, or, you know, I have anxiety, or I've got night terrors, or I have relational issues, or I'm self-harming, or I have an addiction. And these are all normal. These are all very normal things, is what we have to remember. And even as a teenager, especially, I was experiencing all of these, you know, symptoms. They're really symptoms of this trauma. And so it is very difficult, and there is a very high cost to silence. And so to be able to tell, when I finally told my older sister, you know, it helped, but I did get worse before I got better. And I think that's also very normal, because for so long you're concealing subconsciously. There's a fire going on in your brain, right? And you're concealing it and you're concealing it. And then finally your brain goes, fire, there's a fire going on. And so it takes you years later, you realize, oh my gosh, I've been on fire this whole time, you know, just to give an analogy. And so I did, you know, I had post-traumatic stress disorder. I was officially diagnosed with PTSD and insomnia and night terrors and depression and anxiety. And I was self-harming as well, which is very, very common, for this crime specifically. And there is a high cost, but it's really that first step, telling, is such breakthrough. It is such breakthrough. And that's when healing can truly start, is when you're able to reveal what's been hidden and bring that into light.
Wow, I'm going to use several of those quotes in some of my presentations and writings, because there's a high cost to silence is a book within itself.
Yes.
From your parents' point of view, you seem like you're from a very, by reading your book, upper middle class area, I would think, like I was. Did your parents not see? Obviously, by your page by page by page, you could see it start happening, and you was telling what was going on inside of you emotionally. to the point where you was literally pulling up your pant leg and self-harming yourself, cutting yourself. Did your parents see that at all? Did they notice, or did they do the normal thing of, oh, that's just a teenager going through their thing?
Yeah, they really tried, and they spent a lot of money, and they took me to doctors, and they tried to find every other reason for what was wrong, because nobody knew to consider. Nobody would ever consider, oh, this is the problem. You know, your mind just doesn't go there that, oh, maybe my child's being sexually abused. Mm. The parent wants to go there in their mind. And so my parents worked very hard to try to figure out what was wrong with me. I mean, I went to the emergency room on two different occasions for hives because my body broke out in hives all over. And that's how my body responded. And, you know, the perpetrator's wife, she even came and, you know, came to visit me. And even afterwards, you know, is there anything we can do to help? And so that's just how close we were with this family. But my parents tried, you know, they tested me for learning disabilities. My hair was falling out from stress and I was gaining weight. So they tested my thyroid, and that was negative. And they tested me to see if I was anemic because of, you know, of what was seemingly depression, right? So they tried to find a physiological reason for what was wrong, which most parents would go to, right? Because they never knew what the warning signs of grooming are. You know, my perpetrator clearly groomed my family. He groomed myself to try to get us all to trust him, right? And so they, you know, because there was no education, which is what Jenna's Law is all about, is, you know, education is the foundation of prevention. And so Jenna's Law educates, but for years, my parents tried to find every other reason other than that, because they just didn't know. And they weren't equipped with the tools to diagnose or ask the right questions. And so they spent a lot of money and took me to doctors and had me tested physically and then for learning disabilities and, you know, tried to get me melatonin tablets and try to play Mozart music before bed. And, you know, they tried, they really, really, really tried. They just didn't know, you know, they were tricked as well. They were groomed and they were also betrayed by our very close friends.
Yeah. When you see the statistics that you put in your book, and you can get on the internet and find statistics from 1 to 4, 1 to 3 females, 1 to 6 males, 1 to 7, 1 to 10, you know, it goes from very, what I always, when I speak, I'm just interested in, because I have a kindred spirit with you immediately, because we've been there, done that. And I think we see things on the same wavelength. What do you really think the true statistics are, in our children that are being abused? What do you really believe they are?
I really believe that it's around 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 4 girls before the age of 18. And I really do believe it's 1 in 5 males, 1 in 4 males, 1 in 6 males. You know, it's very difficult to know the true numbers because some survivors never tell. And they take it to their graves. And that's what you and I are trying to change, right? Speaking yeah. out and trying to help people heal from within, from the inside out. And I truly believe, you know, I've seen the 1 in 10 statistic, but the research on that doesn't include non-contact sexual abuse. So they don't include all forms of sexual abuse in that research. So it depends on what they're really researching, you know, is it online? Is it in person? But yeah, I truly wonder if not at some point, everyone has had something happen to them. At some point I've always just wondered, you know, because then you hear people that have negative experiences just, you know, from college and things like that. And, yeah. and rape on campus is very high as well. And that's a whole different statistic, right? And so, yes, it's, you know, very, very sensitive topic. But just because it's a sensitive topic doesn't mean we need to shy away from addressing it.
Oh, Right. Well, tell you what, we're going to take our first break, and it gives you time to folks to get on your phones and text people, because we're fixing to really drill in deep tonight. We want some parents' information that's going to be going out here shortly. I kind of, Jenny, when we come back from the break, I kind of want to just nutshell what happened to you. We don't have to go into the great, but just let people that haven't read the book yet to say, hey, this is what happened. This is the impact. And then maybe the impact of a court case involved in the middle of all that. And I want to drill just a little bit into that. Then I want to get into the mind of the perpetrator and how they look at certain girls and boys and start molding them into what they want to abuse. So we're going to do that just on the other side of this first commercial break. Don't leave us. Hang right there. Let people know to hop on, because this is just going to blow your socks off this next 35, 40 minutes. Be right back after this commercial break for another segment of Breaking. This couldn't be coming at a better time. Have you ever felt like you were just trapped and couldn't find your way out of darkness? Have you ever felt like you were drowning and fighting to find your next breath? Well, coming in 2020 will be the second of a three-part trilogy, my new book, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. This new book will provide you a step-by-step approach of how to reach that destination, that important destination called hope. Now, two additional resources are going to be made available when this book is released. One, The Map to Hope. It'll be a handy guide that you can carry around with you, put in your briefcase or put in your purse. And this guide is going to help you find your way when you're stuck in life looking and searching for hope. And then the other resource, the Overcoming the Darkness Companion Journal. I have always believed that journaling is the first step to finding real healing and hope in your life, and this journal will guide you down that path. I'm excited about these resources and this new book that's going to be released in 2020, the Summer of Hope. Now back to the next segment of Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams, right here on BBS Radio. Welcome back. And tell you what, we just have an awesome guest tonight, Jenna Quinn from Dallas, Texas. And I've read her book, Pure in Heart. It's just an absolutely, it's a must read. So make sure you get on and order that. You can order the hard copy, or you can do the Kindle edition, whichever. But it's just going to bless you, and you'll want to pass it on to some of your friends. You know, in my new book that's coming out, Overcoming the Darkness, in a few weeks, I have this line, and I just found this during the break. Tell me if you relate to this with what you've experienced in your teenage years and what you're experiencing now. This is the first line in the new books that's coming out, and it goes like this. Could it be that the worst pain that you have experienced in your life is the very key that you are to use to unlock your destiny for the rest of your life? What do you think about that?
I think that's right on. I think that is spot on. Absolutely. I have seen that in my life, and I have seen that in your life, and I've seen that in other survivors' lives when they are willing to, let go of their pain and, really dig deep in their faith, so to speak, and say, you know what? What the enemy meant for harm, I know that God is going to bring for his glory. And you know what? My favorite verse, really, I have so many, but I feel like it's very applicable to myself and your life as well, is Genesis 50:20. And this has helped me in my walk so much. And I refer to it almost every day. And it's Joseph, and he's talking to his brothers after seeing them for the first time after they, beat him up and left him for dead. And he says, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, so that many lives may be saved as they are today. So it brings it back to the present, as many lives are being saved even today, because he saved. He was the one who saved them from the famine. And so look at, you know, you just look at the big picture, and it's so true. It wasn't just that his life was saved for in and of himself. It was his life was saved so that he could be a blessing for others.
Wow.
And it brought it back to today. You know, that's happening today and tomorrow. And I have really lived my life by that as well. You know, just that one place of pain and that place of trauma. There's a real need for that place to be something that can actually be used as a catalyst for your greatest purpose and your greatest destiny and your greatest blessing, truly.
Yeah, and I really believe we have hundreds, if not thousands, of people that are listening right now that could be, Jenna, going through something in their life traumatic and abusive. If you could do it eyeball to eyeball with an individual right now, what kind of words would you give them of encouragement, of hope, of saying, hey, I've been there, done that? What would you share with them if they're involved in it and just can't get past it?
So I would share with them what is most common for almost every single survivor that I've had the privilege of talking with and had the privilege of meeting. And it's actually a study that I want to share, because I know you're a data person and you're a numbers person and a research person, and I am too. I find that it solidifies what I've already been feeling when I can see research about something. But I really address the spiritual impact, because we all have a spirit, whether we realize it or not. And, you know, we have agencies that address, obviously, the physical person. You want your physical body to be healthy and you want your emotions to be healthy. And we have, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy for that. There's amazing therapy techniques for that. And I've gone through the physical and counseling therapy. But the spiritual impact and the spiritual injury of abuse, I find, is sometimes never addressed or the very last thing to be addressed. And I think spiritual impact isn't talked about enough, because we feel it, whether we know that's what it is or not, right? And there was a study of about 527 child abuse victims. And the study found that there was a significant spiritual injury, is what they were calling it, significant spiritual injury. And the injuries included feelings of guilt, anger, grief, despair, fear of death, and belief that God is unfair. Because most people, especially us, we live in the Bible Belt. We're in, you know, Dallas and Houston. And most of us have some sort of upbringing, even if it's just Easter or Christmas is the only times you attend church. But most of us have some type of upbringing in faith, in some type of denomination.
Right.
And even if you don't, you still have a spirit that's hungry. And I think this, I would address the spiritual injury. And I would say, have you thought that God is unfair? And if you have thought those feelings, that's okay, because this is what we need to go before God and tell him. And we can work out our faith with fear and trembling. And we can say, I don't understand. I need you to help me understand this. And I need you to take this ashes, and I need you to make something beautiful from this. And I'm going to take a big step forward and trust you with this, because I'm making a mess of it trying to fix it myself. And that's, I had to get to that point saying, my coping's no good, obviously. It's failed me too many times. And so when you can really, really dig deep in your heart and in your spirit, because that's what sexual abuse affects. You know, I always say, you know, I would have rather had my leg blown off or, you know, my arm shot off. And it wouldn't have been as much of a spiritual injury as the sexual abuse was, at least to me. And I think a lot of people would say that they feel that way as well. And so I think that addressing that is very important.
Wow. I think I've had 54, 55 guests on, and I've never had someone mention the spiritual part of that like that. And that's deep. That's good. I'm going to have to watch this again to get all the wisdom in those statements. That's powerful. When you went through what you endured, and now years later, and you've had the cognitive and the counseling and the physical and the spiritual now, are you at a point where you can say literally, you know, God, because I finally got there, but it took me a while. I can literally say, God, thank you for allowing me to go through that so I can meet people like you. I can meet people online and emails and texts. I would have never got the opportunity to reach and talk and visit and help and benefit from that kind of companionship, relationship online. Do you feel that as you go around the country pre-COVID?
Right. Traveling.
I'm sure you love being out with the people. I can see after the talks that you're just surrounded by people and spend hours talking to them. I love that part. Do you have that same kind of God, thank you, that we've turned this into something awesome for you?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. You know, trauma is really inescapable. Any type of trauma, right? I mean, even if we lived a perfect life on this earth, even if we all treated each other perfectly, we would still have natural disasters. We would have tornadoes and hurricanes, and there would be accidents that happen. And so there's trauma all around us, and there's trauma that is not our fault most of the time. And so, you know, we all have some sort of trauma, whether it's, you know, abuse or, you know, a horrible car accident, or, you know, you've got post-traumatic because you've gotten your house broken into, or you witnessed a crime. Gosh, our first responders, they really, 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 really struggle with the things that they see. And, you know, I don't know if you've been to workshops where our first responders and our police officers are talking about, you know, I mean, the suicide rate is so high for our law enforcement. But anyway, I'm getting caught off. But, you know, there's just a lot of things that can cause trauma in our lives. And we've got to have a place to go. We've got to have a source of refuge with that trauma, because holding it in is really harmful. It's very harmful. It's toxic. It's toxic to hold that in. And for me, my outlet and my source of strength and my source of joy and my source of healing has been, you know, rekindling my relationship with Christ, with the Father. And so that's where I draw my strength. And that's so much a part of my story and my healing.
That's great. That's great. To be able to give some parents that are watching some wisdom, because we always like to give keys to be able to help people. In your story, your perpetrator literally, I think, probably sat in a room and figured out what steps that I need to take to get to where he wanted to get. How do you, and that you've learned from your own personal story, some of the things that potential perpetrators do to groom their victims for the attack?
Yes. Grooming, and I actually do a workshops on grooming and, you know, what to look for and how, you know, how to talk to your kids and how to talk to students, children and youth. And, you know, to make it a very short bullet points here. So grooming is very common for perpetrators, and we talk about it more. There's documentaries out about it. If you saw the Michael Jackson documentary, definitely groomed those kids and those families. Like, come over for dinner and I'll take you on a trip. And it's Michael Jackson, so of course you're going to trust him, right? So it's very common, and there's a lot more awareness about it now, but there's essentially about 7 steps involved to grooming. And it's a very strategic process. It's a very calculated process. And grooming is deliberate actions taken by the perpetrator to gain an emotional connection with the child for the intent of later having sex with that child.
It's premeditated.
It is absolutely calculated. It is strategic. It is no misunderstanding. It is no accident. When they get caught, they try to say, oh, it was just an accident, or it's a misunderstanding. No, that's very, very calculated. That is very wrong. Yeah. And so the first step is identifying and targeting the victim.
Okay.
They know where to go. They pick ones for whatever reason. They pick certain victims, whether, you know, it's an at-risk child or it's a child on the fringe, a child that has parents that are not involved, or a child that is very, very humble, a peacemaker, a child that doesn't want to anger anyone. They go for the peacemakers because they do believe that they can manipulate them through fear and intimidation. So the first step is identifying and targeting the victim. And the second is gaining trust and access to that child and to that child's family. And so people get so shocked. I mean, you and I have been doing this for a while, but, you know, people get so shocked when they see, oh my gosh, it was a band teacher, or I can't believe that it was, you know, a church camp pastor, or I can't believe, you know, it was a dentist or even a pediatrician. And, you know, you ask someone that is a thief for a living and you say, well, why do you rob banks? They're going to tell you because that's where all the money is.
Mm.
And so they work hard to gain trust. That step two is gaining trust and access to children. They need to somehow be around their preferential type that they prefer. So whether it's young, whether it's toddler, it's prepubescent, or, you know, older teens, most of them have a type that they prefer. And so they have to somehow, whether it's through volunteering or, you know, oh, here, I'll take these kids out, you know, I'll volunteer to go on the school trip or whichever, you know, they'll find a way to be around the type of victim that they want to target.
Right.
And then the third step is playing a role in the child's life. So they will often manipulate relationships to convince, you know, the child or the caregivers of the child that they can play an important role in that child's life. So I gave my example in the book, but another good example is from a man, a law enforcement, incredible man that I met when I was speaking up in Michigan. And, you know, he said that he was a survivor and it was his neighbor. His neighbor was a veteran, okay, very respected man in the community. And this boy, he was the boy at the time, he came from a single family home. So it was him and his mom. And he, you know, always wanted to learn to play guitar. And they couldn't afford a guitar and they couldn't afford guitar lessons. So this veteran, this neighbor, volunteered. He knew how to play guitar. So, you know, he told the mom, he said, well, I have a guitar. If you want, I would be happy to teach him how to play. And of course he was thrilled, right? This is what this little boy dreamed of being as a rock star. And he wanted to learn to play the guitar. And so of course, you know, he was so excited about this. And so he started going over there for guitar lessons. And sure enough, I don't have to tell you what happened over time. Very, very, very unfortunate what happened to him. And so that number three, playing a role in the child's life, he played that role. He filled in and he played that role. And so for me, he played the role of a basketball coach, right? And he was a family, a friend and a father figure. And so they want to try to make it seem like the family needs them and the child needs them, so that it's very hard to break off that relationship.
Yeah. And we're going to take a break, our last break now, on after three. So we got three. The next four are coming on the other side of this break. This is a perfect time to call in with a question or comment at 888-627-6008. And, you know, those days of us teaching our children or in school, don't take candy from a stranger in a park, are over, because those stats are 1, 2, 3%, when 93% of the people that abuse our children are people that you know, that have been in your house, that are family members, an uncle or an aunt, or somebody that's, like you said, a neighbor, a coach, a teacher. It's somebody that you are already aware of. And we're going to talk about those other four grooming tips and keys that they use on the other side of this commercial break. Make sure you call 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back for the final segment of Breaking the Silence live from you.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Make sure you call in 888-627-6008. Pure in Heart author, TED speaker, a workshop leader, the namesake for the Jenna's Law that we're going to get to this final segment, and hopefully talk about that before we close out, or we'll have her come back and we'll go into more depth of that, because that's a whole hour within itself. But this is just unbelievable information. And I have to get the last four keys to the grooming keys the perpetrators take. And, you know, Jenna, it's interesting to hear these from you after just reading your book, because you're like, wow, this is exactly the roadmap and the plan that he had with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's clear as day when you know what you're looking for. Otherwise, you can't identify it. It's happening right under your nose and you have no idea. So, let's get right back into these. So the fourth step in grooming is isolating the child. So over 80% of child sexual abuse actually occurs in isolated adult-child interactions, where there is no one else to see what's being done, right? It's a silent crime. It's a hidden crime. It's a relational crime. And so they have to somehow isolate the child.
Does it just absolutely blow your mind when you read stories like Larry Nassar in the Olympics, and he was doing this in the basement of the home alone with these young girls? Does that just not go, what were you thinking, parents? But yeah, because of these grooming tools, you trust them.
So my tip for parents is always, this number four step, isolating the child. You know, for me, the contact sexual abuse started on carpool rides. He would offer to give me rides alone from playing over at my friend's house or from basketball practice. And so as a very close family friend, like a father to me, no one would ever think that this would be an issue. And so I always tell parents, if you have one-on-one lessons that your child is having, whether it's piano lessons or, a math tutor or whichever it is, stay there and be there with them. Bring a book, be on your phone, but just don't leave them unsupervised alone with any adult. So always stay with them, even if it's for a practice or a one-on-one session. Just don't leave your child alone, and you will take risk out big time in this case. So that's number four. And then the fifth one is creating secrecy around the relationship. So this is where these perpetrators will start to kind of test the waters on what kind of secrets can they keep. Yep. So it sometimes starts with little secrets, right? Like, oh, I'm going to, you know, buy you a new shirt, or I'm going to buy you a candy, or I'm going to give you lollipops every time you come. And I don't want you to tell anyone about this. This is just between you and me. This is just our little secret. And that's kind of like a test, right? So can they keep a secret with this or with that? And so they'll kind of build around, you know, this type of secrecy, whether even if it's a secret with information, yeah. You know, telling if it's, you know, a tween or a preteen, like, oh, they have information to tell them. Can they keep the secret? And so they try to find some way to create that secrecy already, warming them up to keep a bigger secret.
Basically. So it's kind of like a litmus test, right? If you yeah. pass this, it gets a little bit larger. The secret gets a little bit deeper, a little bit darker. Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so many examples of that, but we'll keep going. And then the sixth step is actually initiating sexual contact. So they've gone through six steps already before they actually make their first move to initiate some type of contact. And it usually starts off pretty minimal. You know, it's never, rarely, hardly goes straight towards, you know, full rape. It can, but usually they want to try to introduce somehow some type of sexual contact, or they'll show images or pornography, or, you know, ask for images or send images without any kind of consent, right? And so this is the sixth step, is really just warming them up to the idea of sex, really. Just warming them
up. Is the gradual sexual contact to elongate, hopefully, in their minds, the ability to continue the abuse over a long period of time?
Yes, because if they come out too quickly, too strongly, then that would be much easier to tell. It would be, oh my gosh, this happened and it came from nowhere. Well, if it doesn't come from nowhere and there's already been a little bit of boundaries crossed by that point, it's, well, if this was bad, well, then why didn't you tell the first time? See, what we're doing really isn't that bad. I'm just teaching you. So they have all these things that they say to try to make the child, to normalize it.
So when we get the, because I've been in these workshops too, and there's these signs, you know, these physical signs you ought to see if, you know, if they're bleeding, if there's bruises. Yes, because most perpetrators, I don't want to leave a mark because that will end what I have going for me, what I've worked months or years on grooming.
Yes, it's very rare to actually see physical signs of abuse. Even if a child has a stain exam, any type of sexual assault nurse exam, if they have waited to tell, and most children do, right? Over 2/3 of children don't tell right away. And so it could be months or years. And if they go and they have a stain exam, they're probably not going to find anything. And so it's very rare to actually have physical evidence, which is a big myth about this crime, because usually that disclosure is delayed. They don't tell right away. Yeah. So, and then the very last step then would be controlling the relationship. So they have to ensure secrecy, and they have to ensure that that child keeps the secret. So they can often use all sorts of excuses, right? Like you'll never be believed. This was your fault. You did this. You know, the shame, they really play on the shame and blame the child. And they say, you're going to get in a lot of trouble if you tell. If you tell, who's going to provide for the family? If it's somebody in the church, they say, well, you're going to ruin our church. And this is going to be horrible for the whole congregation. You're going to ruin our ministry. They say all sorts of things to try to make sure that that horrible secret is kept inside.
Well, with these seven keys, Curtis, I believe. Curtis, are you there? My son's coming on with a question that probably was brought on by these keys. Hey, Kurt, how you doing?
How we doing?
Well, you're looking good, boy.
I tried to every once in a while.
Welcome. You got a question or comment from people?
Yes, sir. Hey, Jenna, I just want to say it's been a pleasure talking to you this week, getting to know you a little bit, and your show tonight has been amazing. A very, very touching story, and you're just such a strong woman to overcome everything and continue to help people. I just love seeing it. So it's been a pleasure watching your show tonight, Ms. Quinn.
Thank you.
Our question stemmed from, so I played a lot of school sports in school. And, you know, you were talking about making sure parents are staying around their kids to protect them. How do we protect our kids that are getting abused by their coaches or somebody in the school system? How do you protect them?
How do you protect them from that? Okay. Jenna?
Oh, so how do you protect it from happening in the school?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so that's really what Jenna's Law is. That's what Jenna's Law training is.
Let's transition right into that because that's perfect.
And I have a very powerful moment in the book, which, you know, you'll have to read and see how that came about and, you know, how we got that whole process started. But yeah, training is so key. Education is where we are going to put a stop to this. And so what Jenna's Law does is it requires training for school employees, right? For adults, for staff, and for students. So that you have eyes to see and ears to hear to what your peers are doing, to what these other teachers and coaches are doing, right? So you can see what these grooming signs are. And it's an extensive training on, are they always trying to be alone with a child? Is there a certain child that they are maybe giving more attention to than other children? Are they trying to offer, you know, more perks for this child? So there are clear things that you can look for in grooming signs in an adult. And those are red flags. And, you know, our law in most states, and especially in Texas, is to report on suspicion. You don't have to have a disclosure. You don't even have to know that abuse is even happening. If you suspect that someone is grooming, that is something that you can, you know, absolutely report. And so Jenna's Law is the training for, you know, adults, the staff, but then also for the students, because you don't want to train the students and leave the children defenseless as far as, you know, having that conversation with them. And so it's equally important to make sure that kids know who they can tell, what's a safe adult to tell, and what is appropriate and what's not appropriate.
In Texas, and then maybe in the nation, because you have the knowledge, mandated reporters, is it in the state of Texas, we're all mandated reporters?
Yes. We're all mandatory reporters. Absolutely. Yes. And actually, Texas is one of the best states that I have seen in terms of actually prosecuting for a failure to report. I've seen mugshots of principals. I've seen mugshots of assistant principals and even counselors that if there's an open case and it was found that that child disclosed or that you knew and you didn't report, then absolutely. Texas is actually one of the best states for actually prosecuting for failure to report.
That's great. Anything else, Curtis?
We just have an outpour of attention in the inbox and Facebook and our social media. Everybody just loves you, Ms. Quinn. I think your father's watching right now. He had a very heartfelt message to send you. And then it looks like some of your friends are just giving you very nice and heartfelt messages. So, again, I want to thank you for tonight, and God bless.
Thanks.
Appreciate it, Curtis. You're looking good, son. Jenna, we have just a couple minutes before they're going to cut us off, but we have 3 minutes left. They're just telling us. I would love to have you back, number one. I want to invite you to come back because I think just knowing where you came up with the title, Pure in Heart, because I was going, okay, where did this come from? Where did this come from? And I finally got to it. I don't want to blow over people that buy it because that's such a beautiful moment in the life of your support circle. And I thought that was beautiful. You got another book in you?
I do. I do. It's fun because I love writing so much, and I too journaled a lot in my healing journey. And I think it's very important because sometimes if you don't have the words to say, you can write it. And
yes.
I do. I love writing. My grandfather wrote books, and my mother's taught English, so it's somewhat natural. I mean, of course, the editing is always a nightmare, but you know, it's fun to write. Editing's not fun, but write. But no, I think once you've written one, you say, oh my goodness, there's so much more that I want to say, or I should have added that, or I should have said that. And so my next book is actually addressing more the spiritual impact that I lightly touched on in the first segment. And so that's really going to be where I see a huge need right now.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's kind of what my second book is on. And then the third book, I already have it lined out in the trilogy of what I'm going to talk about, too. That's just awesome. If people want to reach out to you, Jenna, as we close out tonight, how would they get in touch with you? The best way to maybe your Facebook page, a web page, email, whatever you want. How can they reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear from everyone. So I do have a website. It's jennaquinn.net or jennaquinn.org. It'll forward to that same domain. And you can, you know, see the TED Talk on there and learn a little bit more about Pure in Heart, the book. And I have all the social media accounts as well, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And please connect with me. I'd love to hear from you and any other questions that we didn't have. And, you know, we're just all in this together. We really are. And I do believe this is the most hopeful time that we've ever had in this issue, as our culture and our society has become more open to hearing about it and taking action towards it with Jenna's law and with other legislation. And it is hopeful because now we have, you know, 1-800 for a child, the child help hotline, right? We have online resources. We have access to things that we didn't have, you know, 20 years ago. They didn't exist when you and I were going through a lot of this. And so it is a very hopeful time right now to be a survivor and to be healing.
Well, fantastic. I tell you what, it was great to have you. And I want everybody to be watching their newspapers. The Jenna law just went through the federal, the Senate, not too long ago. If the House of Representatives signs off it, then Donald Trump, President Trump signs off, it'll be a national law. And that's just wonderful. So I'm encouraged about that. But we'll be recognizing that when we see it now in the paper. Oh, I just heard her the other night on Breaking the Silence. So it's great to have you with us. Thank you so much. And if you ever need anything, if I can ever do anything with you or for you, you give me a call and I'll be right there in your corner. I appreciate it. Just keep up the great work, will you?
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I knew we had so much to unpack. So, yes, we will be talking again soon.
Thank you so much from Dallas. I appreciate it, Jenna. Thank you for being with us. As we always close every program, every week, we always want to let you know, no matter what you're involved with, no matter what you're going through right now, I want to let you know, lean in. There's always, always hope. And Jenna proved that tonight. She showed that in her own life. I want to let you know it can happen to you, too. It's there. It's worth digging for. It's worth hanging in there for. There's always hope. Join us right here next week, 8 p.m. Central Time, live from Houston for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have an awesome week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence. We'll be right back.